Welcome to the Exec MBA podcast. I'm your host, Brett Twitty, and you are listening to a new episode. On this episode of the podcast, I'm excited to feature my recent conversation with Alan Thompson. Alan is a graduate in our Executive MBA class of 2018, and he is also the operator of a Chick-fil-A in the Washington, D.C. metro. We recently caught up with Alan to talk a little bit more about his background, what he did before Darden, his decision to pursue an MBA, and also how his MBA experience helped him make a career transition. So without further ado, here's my interview with Alan Thompson. Alan, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Brett. I'm really excited to be here today. It's been a while since you and I had a chance to really sit down and chat.
I know. The last time I saw you was on a webinar during the summer. We had an alumni Q&A webinar. You were kind and gracious enough to take some time out of your evening to join us for that. But it's great having you on the podcast. I think your story is one that our listeners will really find interesting. You made a career transition through your Darden experience, a pretty significant pivot. We're going to get to all of that. But before we kind of wade in to that part of the conversation, I want to check in with you and see, how are you and your family doing right during this time?
Thanks for asking. The family's doing great, and you know, I think we're going through the same challenges as most families in America right now, trying to figure out how to keep our little one engaged and going despite not being able to attend school in person. So, but you know, we're fortunate and blessed to have our health and to be able to continue our careers and continue to help others where we can.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad to hear y'all are doing well. And again, thanks for carving out some time for the podcast. I know it's been super busy for you at work and home. And so appreciate your being here. So just for our listeners' benefit, tell us a little bit more about your background. Who are you and what did you do before coming to Darden?
So my background is really rooted in the government military. I started my career off as an officer in the Navy and served 8 years active duty and 2 in the reserves. And when I left active duty, I decided and was given the opportunity to go work at the Central Intelligence Agency. And so I spent another 8 or 9 years working there as an intelligence officer in various roles, all within the Director of Science and Technology. And, honestly, had a blast in the Navy, had a blast working at the CIA, really enjoyed both roles. I was always kind of technically focused, in the Navy. I served in the information warfare cryptology arena, and then kind of continued in the same technology focus when I transitioned to CIA. And so, at heart, I am a technologist. My background educationally is in engineering, and I really enjoyed those opportunities to kind of just do things and play around with technology and do stuff that was cutting edge. At some point I kind of started having the itch to do something different.
And so I'm curious about your MBA journey. Was an MBA something you had always thought about, or is it something you came to maybe a little bit later in your career?
No, I never envisioned having an MBA. I never thought about it. My wife, actually, when we started dating, was at the tail end of finishing up her MBA and hadn't really known or really understood much about what the MBA offered educationally and what it could do for you professionally. And so, I obviously watched her along her journey and just looking at what she was learning and how she was taking it and applying it in her own professional arena. And that kind of started to get me interested. But there was probably, 5 or 6 years from the point that she finished her MBA and until I started looking at getting the MBA myself. And so, I think for me, I started looking across the arena of opportunities that I could pursue and, started thinking, hey, I feel like I need to be better equipped maybe. And I needed something that could help me if I was to step out of the government and military space, better take on a transition and not be totally lost to what, was out there. And so I was able to, start looking into opportunities. And I think the Washington, D.C. Metro is one that is just full of different MBA opportunities. I mean, every top school seems to be setting up satellite campuses in or near the district. And so that made it even better for me because my options were many. But I still needed to find the right place for me to go that made me feel at home and made me feel like it was going to give me what I didn't really know I needed, but I know I needed something. So that's probably how I ended up, you know, coming to Darden.
Yeah, I'm curious about what about Darden resonated with you. I know it's been a little while, but do you remember back as you're making your decision? What about Darden stood out?
I do. I think it was you mostly, and how you took care of me. You know, as soon as I called and started to inquire and have questions. But you know, obviously it's a great school. It's a top school, top ranked. You know, that was very appealing. I really like the fact that, you know, not just in the sense of it being a top ranked school, the faculty was top ranked as well. And so I felt like it was going to give me an opportunity to learn from some of the best. You know, obviously the convenience of having the exec program, you know, in Roslyn, was something that was very attractive because I live in, you know, Leesburg, Virginia. So that's only a 40-minute drive, 30 minutes, maybe even without traffic. And then, you know, I think the focus on general management, you know, I just felt like that kind of resonated with me because it gave me a broad breadth of exposure and education that could help me function in any focus area that I may decide to go into. And then, you know, really, I think at the end of the day, it was interactions with people like you and others that I met along the journey that made me say, this is a place that cares about me. This is a place that wants to see me succeed. These are people that I feel comfortable, you know, trusting and being vulnerable with. And it was, you know, one of the best decisions I've made.
Well, that's certainly great to hear. And I think one of the things that we really enjoy about the work that we do as admissions committee members here at the Darden School is that we get a chance to help people make a decision, a really important decision in their life. We don't view our roles as sales roles, more along the lines of counseling or just providing people with information that will hopefully be helpful to them as they navigate their options. And so, you know, getting to know people through this process and being part or at least party to this really important professional decision is one of the great rewards of the job. So one of the things I've been thinking about, Alan, as we have now our newest class of students, the Executive MBA class of 2022, they're getting ready to embark upon quarter one. They've completed LR1 thus far, but quarter one is upon them. I wonder if you can remember back to that first year and what that adjustment was like, going from, you know, just working to and having a life to balancing work life and school. What was that adjustment like?
Hard. It was definitely hard, but I think you really have to one, take it in perspective, right? I mean, going through LR1 was first LR1 just in general was just an amazing experience. I think Darden as a whole does a really good job of welcoming you in, really equipping you during that initial week with, you know, everything that you need as far as, you know, being a student, whether it's, hey, you're going back to school after 5 years, 10 years, 15 years or 20. I mean, for me, it was even reassuring. I remember, you know, reaching out to Barbara Millar and we had just had our little one, just had Olivia literally maybe 2 or 3 weeks before starting LR1. And unfortunately at that time she was in the NICU. And I remember calling her terrified and saying, hey, this is my situation right now. And she just said, hey, we understand. And just let us know what you need to do and what help you may need and what your decision is. And certainly that made me feel comfortable coming to LR1 and knowing that if I had to leave or if I had to make any changes, you know, during that time that I could. You know, certainly it was a lot of conversation with my wife who just really pushed me out the house and said, no, you're going to go do this, right? You've been chasing this opportunity. I got it. But you know, going back to school, and for me, it had been I think at least 7-8 years since I had done anything educationally. And so it was, you got to be patient, you know, in making the transition, but you also have to, one, make sure everything's good at home, right? Make sure that you got, you know, the support of your family, make sure that, you know, things are in a good situation with your family. Make sure that, you know, you are allowing yourself the time to, one, dedicate to school, but also allowing yourself some time for recovery as well. I think that's also important. I mean, it's going to be a 21-month grind. And so giving yourself some space to kind of let your brain rest and let your body rest even, I think is important. You know, so it was great. But going into LR1, you know, not knowing what to expect and probably having a little bit of self-doubt going into it, because, you know, you go into a school like Darden, you know, the assumption is everybody there is extremely talented. And there is certainly a tendency, I think, for a lot of people, and certainly for myself, to doubt yourself, right? You know, you kind of have imposter syndrome, like, you know, they made a mistake with me. I shouldn't have gotten admitted, but somehow they let me into this place. But day one, when you start meeting your cohort and you start having conversations with colleagues, and as you engage in discussion, whether it's, you know, starting on the case method, or, you know, just having, you know, one-on-one conversations on breaks, you know, you start to feel at home, you start to feel at ease, and you start to realize, hey, I do belong, and that my opinion is valued, that I do have something to offer here, intellectually and in other arenas. And so, you know, don't worry about whether or not you belong. If you got accepted, you belong, right? You know, the next question is, you know, how do you get the most out of the opportunity while you're there?
There's so many good points there. We try to make a point every orientation to tell the students that they have earned the spot in the class, that they are there for a reason. And because we know that there are many students thinking, and maybe all of the students are having the same thought that you expressed, you know, oh gosh, am I even supposed to be here? You know, it's so important for people to know, yes, you are. And, you know, what's fascinating to me, Alan, about all of that is, you know, everybody is incredibly talented, super accomplished. They've done lots of great and interesting things personally, professionally. And yet the first day of school is still the first day of school. Sitting in orientation, it still makes people a little bit nervous as you embark upon a new experience. That's always been fascinating to me. You know, as someone who's maybe a little bit a part of that experience, having sort of helped students get to that point, but, you know, now sort of students are moving forward with the program. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on sort of, you know, the sort of going back to school and kind of reusing some of those muscles and maybe, you know, getting back into school mode again. It sounds like it took a little bit of time.
It did. It certainly did. You know, it will feel, for everybody, I think it's going to feel overwhelming. Right. I mean, you have a lot of prep leading up to LR1, and then coming out of LR1, you got just as much, you know, work as you go into the quarter. And it's going to feel overwhelming. But I think, you know, kind of setting up a process for yourself that again allows you the time and space that you need is going to be important. You know, you don't want to wait until, you know, if you got class on Friday, you don't want to wait until Thursday to try to, you know, read through all your cases. You know, you've got to carve that time out from work or family and set those boundaries up appropriately to be able to kind of, you know, gently work your way back into it. As you get in time, you'll get more proficient about moving through your cases, setting up meetings, doing all the work that you need to. But initially it's going to take a little bit to kind of flex those muscles and kind of redevelop them from the time that you were in school. And again, the difference now is for a lot of folks, you know, they may have families, you know, that maybe the last time they were in school, they were single, no kids. And now you have to juggle that. Plus, for a lot of people, they're already doing well in their careers. And so they're in positions that already have a lot of responsibility and authority. And so it's going to be a bit more challenging to juggle. And that's why I think you have to be incredibly disciplined about the use of your time, where you're placing that time. And again, a lot of it's going to be communication. A lot of it's going to be, hey, If you're married and you have a spouse, you know, letting them know, I'm going to need 2 or 3 hours, you know, this evening just to focus on this, right? And doing that as far in advance as possible so that, you know, the expectations are set. And so that way, you know, if there's something that they have to cover down on with the kids or there's something that you just can't support, that they know, right? And they can give you that space that you need. But it did take, I think it took probably almost half a quarter, you know, to really kind of get back into the rhythm of being in school again and having that discipline, setting aside that time that you need, you know, working it into your schedule the way that you need to. And then, like I said, as time goes on, you do become more proficient. And that's another great thing about, you know, the setup with, the program is that, you know, you have learning teams. And so as you progress, you kind of understand better the strengths and weaknesses across your learning team. And as you divide work up, you know, you kind of play to those strengths and weaknesses as much as you can. Obviously, in some areas, you want to allow folks to develop. And so even if something's a weakness, you may still want to let them take a portion of that project or that assignment to let them develop that or work on that. But you become, again, more proficient. You know who to lean on, where to go, who to call if you got this question. You know, this person is great on finance, but this other person may have, you know, better understanding of organizational leadership and say, okay, for this particular course of class, you know, let's lean on them and their experiences to help us formulate whatever response that we're working on. So it did seem incredibly overwhelming, but by the time you get to the middle of the program, I mean, you can probably read, you know, 3 cases in an hour and get moving to the next thing pretty quickly.
So it gets easier. You get better as a student. And I also think, you know, the nature of case reading is you start to figure out what's important and how to digest a lot of information in a short period of time, which is pretty significant executive function, right? If you're going to take on more responsibility in your career, you have to be able to synthesize a lot of information quickly and have a perspective, or at least that's how I've always thought about it.
No, you're 100% right. And not just that, but I mean, just the case method in general helps you develop the ability to quickly analyze and digest information and formulate an intelligent response, right? I would never say, you know, don't do the old method of just read the first sentence and the last sentence of the paragraph and you're good, right? That I would not encourage that. But you know, you do quickly get to understand, okay, let's understand the relevant facts of the case. Let's look at how we need to synthesize that information. And again, even in class during those discussions, you're using a lot of those same tools to, as you get, you know, a cold call and all of a sudden you're on the spot to respond, you know, you've been tracking and following along with the discussion and able to pick out those key points and give a very quick and fluid response to the professor. So, it is one of the intangible benefits, I think, of going through Darden in the case method, that you are, as you say, as an executive, able to better digest, understand that information, and then provide a response that's relevant to whatever problem set is.
So you made a career transition through the program. Curious about how you figured out what you wanted to do. It sounds like it was something on your mind before you started. At least part of the motivation to get an MBA was perhaps broaden the set of opportunities available to you. But how did you figure out what you wanted to do?
That's a great question. So that was a process in itself that was greatly helped through Darden. And I would say, I mean, I think the career resources that you have at Darden are top notch, and being able to sit down with professionals to better understand how you should prioritize, the things that matter to you. For me, it was Connie Dunlop, hands down. I mean, she, you know, after talking to her, I mean, it kind of helped me make a very clear and well articulated, focus, you know, on where I want to go and where I want to take my career. And a lot of conversations with my cohort, you know, with classmates, you know, sitting down with them and just kind of talking about life, you know, outside of the classroom and better understanding where those priorities, you know, lie. But for me, you know, like I said earlier on, you know, we had just had our daughter Olivia, and I was fortunate that I was climbing the ranks pretty quickly at the agency, and was given a lot of opportunity and responsibility there, but also saw sort of the path ahead, right, which was, you know, longer days, long nights, and quite frankly, more time away from my family. And you know, when you know you go through sort of a frightening experience to start out, you know, having your kid in the NICU, you look and say, okay, where are my priorities at? You know, and I kind of looked at it also from the sense of, all right, well, by the time I retire, you know, my daughter's going to be grown. She won't want to spend any time with me at that point. So I need to get the most out of it now, you know, while I can. What opportunities are going to give me that fulfillment that I'm seeking and be able to balance home life the way that I like? And that's what really kind of drove me to start looking at different opportunities outside the government. Like you said earlier, I mean, I kind of knew I wanted something different, but I wasn't sure what that was. And I felt I needed another set of tools and something to help me kind of understand and focus that. And that's where Darden came into play. I end up kind of looking at really three opportunities, I guess, when you really look at it. Right before I left, I mean, I was offered a very, you know, lucrative position within the agency, and I was really excited about that opportunity. I was also talking to a venture capitalist firm about doing a tech startup, and they were really supportive and had some great people behind me. Actually, another Darden grad had kind of introduced me to this VC firm, and then lastly was Chick-fil-A. And I had two really good friends from college. I attended the Naval Academy for undergrad, and both of them had become operators. And it just at that time, I was traveling to the two parts of the country where they were located, and I would visit with them often and their families. And you know, as I had conversations with them and really got the chance to observe what their life was as an entrepreneur, as a business owner, it really started to kind of pique my interest. And this was all in conjunction with, you know, taking, you know, the professional advancement course, PAC, also with, you know, having those conversations with Connie and also, you know, other classmates at Darden within the cohort. And again, it kind of just helped me shape what my priorities, you know, should be. And it's certainly for me, it's family. And I wanted to, again, be a part of that. I wanted to be, you know, present and able to take my daughter to soccer practice or, you know, be engaged, but also, you know, wanted to be an entrepreneur. I wanted to own my own business and be my own boss. And so, you know, when I looked at those options and had those conversations about those options, you know, mostly with Connie, you know, again, it kind of, you know, she helped me shape out, you know, where they all fell within the priorities and understanding what the commitments would be, right? You know, you go through decision analysis. I mean, I was doing everything from making decision trees to looking at all kinds of, you know, tools that you're equipped with, you know, while at Darden to help shape out, this is the direction or path maybe that I should go. You know, but at the end of the day, you know, it does come down to, hey, you know, what do you feel confident in? What do you feel comfortable with? You know, what gives you the best opportunity and option to get down or get to the path that you want to be. And, you know, hey, I had no food retail experience prior to becoming a Chick-fil-A operator, none at all. And so I knew going into it, there was going to be a lot to learn and a lot to adapt to. But again, I had a lot of confidence given the fact that I was a Darden grad and that I had been equipped to be able to take these challenges on, and that I had a solid network through Darden, that if I had issues, questions, anything that I felt I needed, I had people I could reach out to. And that for me felt not just as, you know, folks that were, you know, in my cohort, but people even beyond my cohort. One of the great things that you do in PAC, the professional advancement course, is they have you reach out to an alumni in a field or industry that you might be interested in. And I was just shocked and amazed at how many people responded, right? Everybody responded, actually. I don't think anybody in the course had any interactions where, hey, I reached out to this person and they never got back to me. I think the Darden alumni network is one of the strongest I've ever seen, and I'm proud to be a part of it. And I pay it back, you know, the same way. If anybody from Darden reaches out to me, I always pick up the phone and give them a call and have a conversation with them. So, you know, all those things kind of mixed in, what kind of contributed to the change. I mean, I think coming in, I was very much undecided. You know, did I want to be a climber? Did I want to be a switcher? You know, where path did I want to take? And ultimately I decided to be a switcher and did probably a 180 turn from what I was doing to what I'm doing now.
So for our listeners, many people listening to this podcast may have eaten at a Chick-fil-A, but may not necessarily know what it means to be an operator of a Chick-fil-A. What does it look like? I mean, I'm sure no 2 days are the same, but at a high level, what's the nature of your current work?
It's all encompassing. I mean, And this is the fun part for me being a business owner is that you're involved in every aspect of the business, right? From technology implementation, you know, even for an industry like ours, I mean, there's a lot of tech. So that kind of keeps, you know, scratches that itch for me, but, you know, from marketing to finance to, you know, you see what we're going through right now with the pandemic, understanding the economy and the impacts within the business, you know, you're looking at everything from a 50,000 foot view. But at the end of the day, I'm still a small business owner. And so I'm still very hands-on with my business. And I mean, just yesterday I went in because I knew we were going to be a little shorthanded and I ran a shift, right? I haven't done that in a very long time, but I did it, you know, just to help out a little bit and give some relief to the team. You know, and I participate in training with my employees. I participate and pretty much, you know, every decision that's being made, you know, not micromanaging it, but, you know, you get the opportunity to help coach and develop. I mean, in this industry, most of the people that work for you are very young, you know, everything from teenagers to folks, you know, just starting their careers. And so you have an opportunity to help shape, mold, and develop them, for whatever they're stepping into next. I mean, for a lot of my employees, I encourage them and I tell them, hey, Chick-fil-A should just be a stop along the journey for you. Let us help you. Let us help you get to where you want to go. If that's becoming a nurse, let's look at what skills and resources we can equip you with, you know, and I think certainly our hospitality training, you know, helps anybody in any business where they have to communicate and engage with people. So it's a nonstop, you know, grind when it comes to all the things that you have to engage on. And right now is an exciting time to be in food retail, especially, you know, quick service, just because of all the evolutions that we're going through. I've just before this, you know, sitting down with planning a meeting to sit down with a company that's unveiling a new technology that helps delivery drivers. I mean, delivery sales have shot through the roof for just about every business in America right now. And this particular company helps with dealing with the congestion within, you know, urban areas, which where my store is located, and helping delivery drivers find parking spaces, know how long they're gonna have to wait to either get a parking space or how long they have to be in a space before, you know, they need to move. And so, you know, where I'm at within the Columbia Heights neighborhood of Washington, D.C., I mean, it's sort of the epicenter of the city. I mean, we're literally, if you look at D.C. on the map, we're right in the middle of it. And so it's very congested. And so being able to, you know, have discussions with companies that are pushing, you know, new technologies such as this, you know, I love it. It's exciting. You know, just this morning I was pushing out promotions to encourage people to use Chick-fil-A delivery. And so you have all these tools that you can leverage, as a business owner. And again, you're making decisions. The name of the game here is making money. Right. And so, you know, I can't always do all the things I want to, because, you know, there's an expense, there's a cost to it, and you got to weigh, you know, what the benefit is versus the risk. But, you know, certainly, it's, again, having all the exposure that I did at Darden makes me far more confident to step into these roles and have these conversations. I mean, even things from negotiations, you know, sitting down with, you know, even before it was a big deal about delivery fees and cities starting to cap those. I mean, I was at the table negotiating very hard with a lot of these delivery companies to get those fees down. And I was very successful at doing that. But I couldn't have done that if I hadn't gone through Darden and taken negotiations, right? That gave me, again, a confidence to understand what my Batman is, right? You know, giving you the tools to say, this is what I need to go into this situation with. So, I can't, you know, say enough about the opportunity. It's a big brand. It's a fast growing brand, and I'm very proud to be a part of it. And being able to be in my community and help in my community and help my employees. I mean, those are things that really bring me, you know, joy and satisfaction in this role. Again, it's a lot different than what I was doing before. But it gives you an opportunity to make a direct impact on somebody's life very, very quickly, right? I mean, it's through the daily conversations I have, it's through those interactions I have with guests sometimes. I mean, all those things, you know, make a huge difference.
Alan, in the interest of full disclosure, I do want to mention that I am a former Chick-fil-A employee. I worked at Chick-fil-A from the time I was 15 till I was about 17 or so. In location in Charlotte, North Carolina, it's a very successful Chick-fil-A. It was actually a top 10 grossing Chick-fil-A in the country. And in 1996, I'll give you a little bit of a history thing. We do about $1,200 or $1,300 in 1 hour. In a lunch rush, which in $96, that's actually quite a bit of money. You know, Chick-fil-A prices have changed a bit since then, but that's back when like your average combo would go for like $4.50. So we would certainly sell some chicken. And it was a great experience in terms of learning a lot about customer service and, you know, having this kind of service industry jobs. I second what you shared. So I don't want to go off on too much of a tangent. I just wanted to say a lot of what you just said resonated with me personally.
Well, I don't want to make you feel bad, but my chicken sandwich alone cost about $4.50 now. So it's nothing to hear about stores having $4,000 hours or maybe even $5,000 hours, depending on parts of the country that you're in. So, it's a great brand. I think the focus on bringing local ownership. You know, I grew up in the DMV, and so I was fortunate to have a store within Washington, D.C. is a winning, just a winning formula. And so, things have changed a little bit, Brett.
So many of our listeners may be listening to this and thinking, gosh, there's a lot happening right now with the pandemic and just the disruption that it's caused. And certainly the food service industry, hospitality industry has been hit hard. I'm wondering how things are going right now, how you're adapting to the present circumstances. It sounds like certainly more delivery is happening, but you know, how are things going for you and your store?
Things for us are going well, given the situation, the circumstance. I mean, we've had just a lot happening since the pandemic hit across the chain. I think one, kudos to my fellow operators and just the brand in general for, I think, building a good amount of trust with our guests even before the pandemic hit. And I think a lot of that is helping us navigate some of these troubled waters right now. We certainly in my store have been impacted by it. I mean, I just several weeks ago, had to shut down for a few days because I had several employees who tested positive for COVID, you know, with one of them having to be hospitalized. And just out of an abundance of caution and following CDC guidelines, we decided to, pause operations and make sure we gave an opportunity for everybody to quarantine. And once we were through that, we opened the store back up and we were right back on track. And a lot of our guests, you know, came back and said, "Hey, we're so happy that you're open again and really missed you guys." And I think, again, that's just a testament to the brand. Certainly, you've had to innovate in this environment. Those of us who are, based in cities, it is challenging because you've lost a significant population in the cities, either because more people are working from home when they're living in the suburbs, or you're dealing with other challenges like universities not coming back. We're not far. My store is not far from Howard University. And so, we have a strong partnership with Howard and the students and the athletic department over there. And so a lot of that has obviously impacted the number of transactions and it's impacted sales. And so we've had to look creatively at ways to regrow those sales and regrow those transactions. I mean, even with the reduction, in some of those transactions of sales, I mean, we're still on pace to have a pretty good year and probably do more in sales than most quick service businesses in our community and a lot of other places as well. But like you said, delivery has been the thing I think that has you know, really keeping a lot of the food industry afloat right now. And I think, you know, certainly the willingness to pivot into it and equip your team with the resources. I mean, we already have partnerships for delivery with places like DoorDash and Uber Eats, Postmates. But we've also launched our own delivery service, you know, through Chick-fil-A. And so we're using that to, you know, grow additional sales. And you know, I haven't started doing as many orders in Chick-fil-A yet as I'm doing with DoorDash or Uber Eats, but we're quickly getting to that point. You know, we've got, you know, drivers, we're getting vehicles. I've got electric bikes that I've purchased to give some of my younger team members to use in the city. And sometimes those bikes get to places faster than the cars can. So yeah, it's been a need for a lot of innovation, a need for, you know, marketing innovation even. And again, it doesn't, you can't wait until the emergency happens to start doing some of these things. I mean, again, I think the trust that we built with our guests, both in, you know, how we run our businesses, how clean they are, the quality of the product, the quality of the service, the operational flow, right? All that allowed us to pivot pretty quickly to continue to do well throughout the pandemic. So, but again, you know, I get back to, you know, that confidence that I had, you know, being a Darden grad, allowing me to say, okay, let's assess the situation. Let's look at how we engage our team. Let's look at how we engage our guests. Let's look at, you know, everything that we need to, that will allow us to, you know, deal with the challenges as they come. Right. And there's no easy answer to a lot of these situations, you know, especially when you start to see some of your employees fall ill with COVID. You know, you want to do whatever you can and whatever it takes to make sure that they feel supported and they feel safe, and give them the resources that they need. You know, it is a tough industry. I mean, obviously, a lot of the folks and or everyone in food retail was deemed essential, right? And, you know, I'll be honest with you, you know, as a former intelligence officer and military officer, you know, you kind of scratch your head at that. But okay, you know, our commitment is to continue to serve our communities. And so let's do that and let's do that safely. And how do you come alongside and support them? You know, people who are, you know, just as concerned and just as scared about their health and contracting the virus. And also making sure that, you know, if the worst does happen, that they're supported. And so we lean in heavily, you know, both to taking care of our team. I mean, there's no expense that is, you know, too much to make sure that they're good, whether it's, you know, buying face masks for everybody, whether it's, you know, making sure that we have, you know, disinfectant servicing coming in and paying for those services. I mean, you do everything you possibly can for them and the guests. And then, you know, for me, the fight to make sure that we pivot and stay open is that so I can keep paying my employees, right? I mean, they're all hourly employees. And, you know, if you're not open, then you're not able to pay them for the most part. And so, you know, we had to look at how do we do that? How do we do that safely? Like I said, and I think we've come up with a good formula for it. You know, and we're supported by Chick-fil-A Inc. And, you know, unfortunately, when the worst did happen, you know, it was an easy decision for me to say, hey, look, we're gonna take this pause. We're gonna close down for a few days, but I'm gonna make sure I pay you guys, right? And that you're gonna be okay. I don't want you worrying about, you know, missing the paycheck and not being able to take care of your obligations at home. So it's a you know, you step into these roles and within leadership, whether it's in a quick service business or you're still in government or in any other place, you know, you've got to have resources and tools available. You know, to go through these decisions and try to make the best decision that you can for your folks.
Well, Alan, I so appreciate your candor. I know it sounds like just a lot right now for you and your employees, but I'm glad to hear that y'all are weathering everything. And it sounds like even with everything going on, still having a pretty good year. I will sort of close here by asking you the question that we ask all of our podcast guests. Any advice that you have for prospective students and, you know, people who are listening to this podcast, thinking potentially about getting an MBA, anything you might share with them?
You know, first choose Darden, right? So, you know, that's the first piece of advice. And then two, you know, enjoy the journey. You know, really, yes, there's going to be tons of cases and tons of classes that you're going to take. But I think the biggest thing is going to be the relationships that you make with the faculty, with your fellow classmates, and just, you know, all kinds of folks that you encounter along the way. And I think you know, really, really focus on those and cultivate those relationships. I mean, I have, you know, I mean, there's quite a few people from my Darden cohort that I talk to on a regular basis, you know, and we chat about our journeys, where we're at professionally. We talk about our families and what's happening there. And we still, you know, before the pandemic, we would get together every once in a while and hang out. And I expect the same thing to happen, you know, when we get through this. So, you know, these are folks that, you know, I genuinely love as family. And, you know, these are people that I feel I can be vulnerable with and share my challenges and my concerns. And, you know, it really does help, I think, to, you know, have that support network in place, not just while you're going through Darden, but even post Darden. And because, you know, life doesn't stop throwing you know, curveballs, right? We see that now. Nobody knew in January that we'd be facing a pandemic come March, and that seems to have no end. So, you know, I think being able to, you know, have folks that you can, you know, laugh with and cry with, you know, is something that's very important to your own health, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. And I think, you know, for me, I mean, I've got some of those partners, you know, through Darden. And so enjoy the journey and, you know, build those relationships, you know, take advantage of every opportunity you get to travel somewhere. If you get those opportunities, you know, and have those conversations, those dinners with faculty and learn from them, build those relationships. I mean, it's going to be a blast. I can guarantee you that. It's hard work. Yes. But you're going to enjoy every minute of it. I think at the end, you know, when that last, you know, weekend together, you know, doing LR2, I mean, we shed a lot of tears because, you know, we just knew that we wouldn't have the opportunity to see each other, you know, so frequently, but we still try to keep up with one another and make sure that we're doing okay.
Well, Alan, thank you again for coming on the podcast. Glad to hear you and your family are staying safe and healthy. And obviously, same wishes to everybody there at the Columbia Heights Chick-fil-A. Appreciate everything you're doing to support each other and the community. And you know, best of luck in the months ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity, Brett. And you know, love what you do for Darden. And you know, just wish everybody at the Darden family the best. And you know, look forward to seeing everybody again once we get through the pandemic.
And that was my interview with Alan Thompson, a graduate from our Executive MBA class of 2018. As always, if you have any comments, suggestions, requests, anything you'd like for us to cover here on the podcast, we're all ears. We can be reached at exec. That's EXEC. MBA@darden.virginia.edu. Until next time, stay safe, be well, and thanks for listening.